Next case for argument is 25-1186, French Port IP versus CHI Overhead Doors. Okay, I think, Mr. Mason, we're ready to proceed.
Appreciate it. So, good morning, Your Honors, and please the Court. Jeffrey Mason on behalf of Morbis LLP. The sole issue before this Court is whether or not Morbis had in its possession on March 15th, 2022, sufficient funds to comply with the agreed order filed by the parties on April 13th, 2022.
I think the issue is whether the District Court abused its discretion in requiring Morbis to pay 50% of the discovery sanctions. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. And I think what has happened is I think there's a sort of simple set of facts about a simple set of, fairly simple set of situation, which then got layered on a lot of other stuff. And that's kind of why I wanted to bring it back. It is absolutely abuse of discretion. It is absolutely a question of whether it was clearly erroneous.
But you're not challenging the judgment to issue sanctions. You're only challenging the division, how the court divided the
That's correct. Certainly, the sanctions against French Port.
You concede that as to the judgment of the district court, as to the underlying basis for the sanctions.
Yes, there was a 50-50 division for two separate sets of actions, and actually that's exactly what I wanted to start with, was exactly the behavior from French Port that was sanctioned and the behavior from Morbis that was sanctioned, because I think it's important, and certainly the French Port is not here. I'm only representing Morbis, my former client French Port.
Can you give me a brief statement as to how the issues that you're bringing before the court invoke a federal significant question of patent law?
I'm sorry? I didn't quite catch the question.
I'm asking as to the jurisdiction that you're asserting. I don't see a patent issue involved in the case. I see a disagreement over apportionment or between two parties in the case. In fact, a lawyer and a client as to division of sanctions, but I don't see anything that has to do anything with patent law.
Well, ultimately, this was a patent case, and this was some sanctions relating to very complicated document production that arose out of a very complex patent case where we had a very complicated agreed order.
Is it your position that we have jurisdiction over any issue that bubbles up in the context of a patent trial or case?
I believe it's a sanction issue that's unique to the facts of our case, which is a very complicated patent case. So I do believe jurisdictionally. But, you know, if Your Honor would like, we can certainly brief this issue.
Just following up on Judge Reyna's point, what criteria do we use? What legal criteria do we use? I mean, you're not challenging the $46,000 whatever sanction. You're not challenging that. That stands, and you've not given us, you're not arguing there was no basis to allocate that much in attorney's fees. So what?
I am challenging it, yes.
You're not challenging the ultimate issuance of a sanction.
Okay, I see.
You're just challenging whether the sanction should have been against you as against the other side, right?
As against your client.
I see what you're saying.
The only issue is the district court said you got to pay half of the sanctions and your client has to pay half of it. And the only question you've asked us to review is whether it was an abuse of discretion for you to have to pay half of it, correct?
That's correct.
So what's the criteria that we use in terms of the allocation? As Judge Stark mentioned earlier, it's an abuse of discretion.
That's correct.
So you're saying the district court abused his discretion by allocating it in the way that he did.
Well, yes, but also there was some ex parte work that happened here. It was some very serious misconduct by my client that I do feel bluntly makes this a very important federal question.
What's the federal question with respect whether or not
whether a sanction can be based purely on an ex parte contact?
Well, what if we disagree with your predicate? What if we disagree with that premise and we do not think that the district court relied exclusively or even at all on this ex parte communication?
I think then both jurisdiction will be lacking and I will lose also on the merits if that's the case. But I do feel very strongly that, in fact,
You've agreed to the merits already.
What's that?
I said you've agreed to the merits already. You're not challenging the judgment below as to the basis for sanctions or the issuance of sanctions. You're just saying, look, I'm liable for sanctions, but not this much or not at all.
Not at all. Yeah, exactly. I'm not liable at all, I don't believe.
Okay, that's your argument.
That's my argument.
You're not liable at all.
That's right.
But that's exclusively because you allege they improperly relied on some ex parte communication.
Well, also that there's no other evidence in the record to support the sanction. Yes. I mean, there is this ex parte issue, which is quite important.
If we are not persuaded, first of all, the district court said this court has not considered Maher's letter, right? The district judge. I understand the magistrate judge had a footnote, but the district judge who reviewed the magistrate judge's work said expressly, this court has not considered Maher's letter.
Right.
That was said. If we find that you haven't shown us that's clearly erroneous, if we believe the district court when it says that, there's nothing left to your appeal.
Yeah, then I lose. That's right.
Okay.
So let's maybe start with that. I mean, the magistrate judge ultimately decided that, in fact, Morbis had sufficient funding to comply with this court order. The entire case, however, was thrown out for noncompliance with this order. We got a second chance. In other words, the sanctions relate to a motion for sanctions that was filed. The attorney's fees that were in question were for a motion for sanctions. We complied as well as we could. My client was sanctioned for delaying unreasonably providing us the funding to comply with the court's order. We did not comply fully with that order. However, we did get a second chance to do so. We got a second chance.
We understand the background of the case. We read the papers and everything. How did the district court abuse its discretion? Address that issue.
Certainly, because at the end of the day, the district court, saying it was not relying, said, the magistrate, this issue was well documented. This dispute between Mr. Maher and Mr. Mason about these issues was well documented by number 93, docket number 93. So this letter is just part of a chain of things that are of record. But if you look at number 93, this is in the brief as well, but I'll just simply say it again. If you look at number 93, what Mr. Maher was complaining about there was totally different. He said, you stuck me with this effing email job. You should have done it yourself, or you should have hired some other attorneys to do it. That's all it says. It doesn't say what he said in the ex parte contact. The ex parte contact was when he got into, he took the money for himself. He didn't actually pay outside counsel to do anything. That's the first time he said it, and I've never seen that letter.
Assume for the purposes of this question that you're right that 93 is materially different than the ex parte letter that none of us have seen, and assume that you did not have sufficient resources from your client to comply in full with the discovery. I'm still struggling to see how it would be an abuse of discretion for the district court to, I think, reduce the fees that were requested by over 50%, because I think the opposition
That's not disputed. You're right.
It's not disputed. You already got a 50% cut from that, and then the district court made your client pay 50% of it, and you've already said you have to lose unless I'm persuaded that the district court is actually misleading when it says it didn't rely on the letter. So again, I want to give you, for purposes of the question, you didn't have enough money and the ex parte letter contained something different than the rest of the record has. I still don't see how you've shown an abuse of discretion. So am I missing?
The declaration of Alan Potashman, who was the attorney from the outside vendor who actually conducted the review, was totally ignored by both the district court and also the magistrate, where he basically said, yes, I billed out this information, I built out this, I did this work. The accusation that Mr. Mason just pocketed this money, it doesn't square with that declaration at all. And there's no way to square a sanction with me. If I did everything right, then I should.
But you can't stand there and say you did everything right because the district court found you didn't do everything right and you haven't challenged that on appeal. That's where Adrena started you.
You're quite right. Nobody ever the case was ultimately thrown out on this basis. I mean, the case was dismissed as a sanction. So we had this agreed order. We failed to comply with it. We were given a second chance to comply with it. My client promised me $100,000. They reneged. We were not able to engage the outside vendor. We were never able to comply. The case ended. You're quite correct. But I did everything I could with everything that I had in my possession. I mean, I guess that's, at the end of the day, I feel like that's why.
District court said, under these circumstances, you get to split the sanction with your client. And you ask us to say that's an abuse of discretion. I guess I'm just not hearing a basis to do that.
Because they found two different things were done wrong. The client was sanctioned for delaying unreasonably providing me the funding. I was sanctioned for not perfectly complying with the order within the time that I had, which I feel ultimately, given that the amount that I did not have, there was no way to do it. We were short almost $75,000. We only had $125,000 to work with. We did as much as we possibly could. And when we begged our client for that money, we did not get that money back. So at the end of the day, we were helpless to comply with this order. And I don't feel we should have been sanctioned for that. I do feel that that was clearly erroneous.
You made all these arguments. Did you make these arguments to the district court?
Well, clearly erroneous, no.
Basically, right?
Well, no. I mean, I tried to get the court to open up the record, deal with the ex parte issue, and also have a hearing on these fairly serious issues.
Is any of this under seal?
Well, yes. In fact, I mean, there have been a lot of attorney-client kinds of issues that have had to be waived as part of this. Some of these hearings were held in camera where there were certain kind of back and forth. But ultimately, my client has accused me of taking money and using it for something other than what I told him I was using it for. I feel that I'm entitled to defend myself.
Can you cite one legal case that supports your position?
On the attorney-client privilege?
Can you cite a legal case that supports your position with respect to the ex parte letter and what the court decided?
Everybody seems to have agreed, and so nobody ever actually raised a particular case that the use of an ex parte letter as the basis of a sanction such as this would be totally improper. In fact, it never came up.
And which case are you citing?
I am not citing a case right now, Your Honor, but I'd be happy to provide a brief on that issue if you'd like.
And that's a problem, sir. Okay. This is a court of law, and we base our decisions on our precedent and common law. And you come and you don't even cite a case. You don't have a case to support your position.
Everybody, including the district court, assumed that, in fact, this would be the case. And so I feel like this law of the case at this point, actually. But no, I do not have a case to cite.
Okay, let's hear from the other side. Okay, how do you pronounce your name?
Rue.
Okay, Mr. Rue, please proceed.
All right, and good morning. May it please the court. Jeremy Rue on behalf of CHI. So Moores appealed the lower court's order of apportionment. That's the narrow issue here is apportionment. And Moores argues that the decision was, quote, based entirely on that ex parte submission by Frenchport's CEO. But Moores' argument is contradicted by the plain language of the district court's order and then undisputed facts that were submitted by Moores in its own filing. So when the district court relied on the material submitted by Moores and cited in the order, there was no abuse of discretion in its allocation of the sanctions.
Well, your friend here today seemed to, I read the briefs too, as being very specifically relying on the fact that there was an improper reliance on alleged ex parte letter. But he seemed to sort of add to that here today and sort of ignoring the letter. So let's ignore the letter and just the facts that were separate and apart from the letter. He seems to be arguing that that in and of itself is abuse, an abuse of discretion. And do you read him as doing that? And if so, why is he wrong?
Well, we think he's wrong. We disagree with that argument. So there is substantial record evidence and definitely substantial enough that there's not an abuse of discretion here. So the primary item of evidence that the district court cited to, it's docket 93 below, but that's at appendix 129 to 135 here in the appellate record. And so the district court relied on this. This is a submission by Moores. And so, for example, at appendix 132, it's undisputed that Moores confirmed that on March of 2022, it received at least a $100,000 wire for purposes of complying with discovery. And ultimately, obviously, discovery was not complied with. Also, at appendix 133 in that same submission, Moores admitted, quote, Frenchport eventually did fund an external review. So it's these undisputed facts that were submitted by Moores that the district court relied on to apportion this. And as your honors observed, it reduced the fee by 50% when it split it. And so when the district court explicitly did not rely on the ex parte letter, there was no abuse of discretion then in apportioning fees based on this information from Morbs.
If Morbs did not have adequate funding in the relevant period, which I think is 2022, could it be sanctioned anyway? I recognize you don't think that's this case, but that's an issue that has been nagging at me. If they really didn't have sufficient funding to comply with the obligations to the court.
I think hypothetically, that's an issue that the district court did actually grapple with. And that is the reason why if the court felt that Morbs didn't have any ability to comply, it potentially would have given 100% responsibility to French Porter, to the client in this case. But based on the totality of the record evidence, which as I just mentioned, for example, Morbs had $100,000 in March of 2022, and failed to comply at all with, discovery. The district court made the factual determination that Morbs had at least some culpability in the misconduct here. And so that's the factual determination that the district court made that is subject then to the an abuse of discretion review.
No.
And so unless the panel has any more questions, we would ask that the panel affirm.
Thank you. Okay, you've got a little time for rebuttal.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. So I wrote down one of the findings that Mr. Rue pressed that the district court allegedly made. And what I wrote down was, quote, failed to comply at all. I think if that was true, I certainly should have been sanctioned. I have $100,000. I didn't do anything with it. Yes, that would have been sanctionable. That's not what happened. We had 1 million pages of emails. We went through those 1 million pages. We reviewed for relevance. We reviewed for privilege. We coded for we did metadata. We coded for a lot of things. We did not get everything right. We needed $75,000 more to get everything right. And when I begged my client for it, I did not get it. And I think at the end of the day, the district court's record must be reliant on this ex parte letter, because I think the only reason why someone is sanctioned in this circumstance is if in fact you flatly do not do what you say you're supposed to do and what you've been ordered to do. What we did is everything we possibly could. Frenchport was sanctioned for delaying unreasonably in providing the funding. We did everything we could in the time we had allotted to us and with the money that we had. And ultimately, that's why I feel it's clearly erroneous to sanction us for doing everything we possibly could have done under the circumstances.
And thank you.
Thank you.
Thank both sides. The case is submitted.